Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule, it's just whenever I finish the book I do the review, stick it up here on the podcast feed for everyone to download and listen to. Today I'm going to be reviewing a book slightly out of order, but this one is fresh in my mind. It is called The Avogadro Corp. When I first thought it, I thought it was like the causes in like, yeah, we're going to fight for Avogadro. No, it's Corporation. Corporation called Avogadro. It's subtitled The Singularity is Closer Than It Appears. Written by William Hertling. Now, this was recommended to me in an email that I got via Gmail. This email that I got via Gmail was from a guy called Jefferson Clark and said, hey, thanks for the book recommendations. Oh, no, that's my reply to him. He said, I stumbled upon your podcast recently. Talked about a bit about wool and shift and dust. And we had a kind of meeting of minds in that one, as we both really regretted ever reading the third book by Hugh Howey there. Obviously, he said a few other books. He says, also, Avogadro Corp, Singularity Number 1 by William Hertling, a neat take on AI and how it could be created by accident and we may not even know. Written in 2011 and then self-published. And normally, if someone has self-published a book and sends it to me, I'm like, I'm not really interested in self-published book. But, and this is what I mentioned in a previous podcast, if I find a book, if you recommend a book to me and it's about 6 or 7 hours, and it's on Audible, and I can spend a credit on it and listen to it in a few days' time, hey, I'll give it a go. And that's what I did like with recently with a three-body problem, and that's what I did with this. So I thought I'd check it out, and here it is on Audible, narrated by Rob Grannis. Rob Grannis. And who was, might as well just talk about now, an okay narrator. Didn't really have a lot to work with in terms of this book, in terms of like, you know, what different characters were actually like, if they were different or not. But he did an okay job reading this book. He did have this funny thing that sort of like, at some points he'll try a new voice, and for a while he'd try this new voice just to kind of establish the character as a different character, and then that voice would kind of just fade away, and he would just do all the voices in his normal voice again. I thought it was actually quite sweet. So, and now he was an old man with a low voice. Okay, this is my old man with a low voice. And then he just, and then the next chapter, that person would just have the same voice as everyone else, which I thought was quite fun. But otherwise, good. I did actually listen to through this book at 1.5 speed, though, because it wasn't that fast-paced. Anyway, let's get on to this. So, yeah, this is a book about artificial intelligence or well, it's a weird one because it's kind of about artificial intelligence in that someone creates an artificial intelligence expert system kind of thing. There is kind of one paragraph or one short conversation where they say, do you think it's self-aware? And they're like, maybe it is self-aware. And someone else says, maybe it's not self-aware. Does it mean it? Does it matter? And that's pretty much the whole conversation of this. And it's actually quite refreshing to read about artificial intelligence, which isn't about self-awareness, which isn't about now it knows itself, or does it think, or does it have a conscience, or what's going on there. Now, it starts off in this is pretty much... this book is set in Google, and it's not called Google, it's called Avogadro, named after, well, put it this way, Google is named after the Google, which I think is a one followed by 100 zeros, is called a Google, or Google with OL at the end rather than LE, and when they were naming Google, the search engine, I thought, well, it's got to search lots of databases. It's got a big job in front of it. Let's call it Google because that's kind of like a fun name, which also means like big number. And so another big number, which is the Avogadro constant, which is 6.022 × 10². Avogadro's number. It's about how many? What is it? How many? Here on Wikipedia anyway. Yeah, how many molecules make up, or how many atoms in 12 grams? And that's, turns out, it's all dependent on the atomic number. Yeah, I don't really want to get into that, because actually, how many grams or how many molecules or atoms are in a gram of anything doesn't really come into anything. You know, that's just not what this is about at all. What this is about is Google. However... William Hertling, who's decided to write this book, has decided to write a book about the biggest, most successful internet company. He always calls it an internet company. This is it. We work for Avogadro. It's the biggest internet company, and we've got thousands of servers. We've got more millions of servers. We've got more servers than anyone else on the internet. We are the world's biggest internet service, and there are so many different things. Even though the book is set in Portland, because that's where this company is based, it might as well be set in Silicon Valley. And you know, Mountain View or wherever, all those you know, Facebook and Apple, they're all in the same place there. This is set in Portland, not in Silicon Valley. I don't even think Silicon Valley is even mentioned, but it might as well just be Google. It's got two founders, and I think one of the top executives is called Marissa. I think Marissa Meyer, was she at Google, at Yahoo Now or something like that? One of them is called Sergey Brin, and the other one's called Larry. No, one of them isn't called Sergey Brin, but it's a guy. Again, I looked on the Wikipedia page for this, but it's self-published. There's not a lot about it, but it's pretty much one guy who's got a Russian-sounding name, and the other guy, and they have a web server. Instead, it's not called Gmail; it's called Avogadro Mail, and Avogadro Mail is one of the biggest things in the world. Now, I don't mind a book which is like, hey, this is a fictional company, obviously based on this real company. I'm like, okay, that book is obviously talking about, you know, a game company which has a massively multiplayer online world. You're like, okay, that's kind of World of Warcraft style thing. It can stand in and just say, well, now we're all on this, we're all with this big internet company, but in the future, this will be the big game that we're playing. Okay, there'll be a new game in the future. Let's just all say that game exists. Well, here, it's like Avogadro exists in this book, but without the same history that would make it be as big as Google, and without the same reason it exists. But then also it isn't Google, because Google isn't mentioned at all. Otherwise it would be like, yes, Avogadro replaced Google as everybody's email of choice, and that's what they could have done, but they didn't. So it's this weird kind of falling down in the middle. Like, this book doesn't like make logical sense. It's the world's biggest internet company, but it never actually says what it does. It's not like, yes, it's like Facebook, which is a social network, which makes its money by advertising to people, or it's Google, which makes its money by, you know, through search. That's where Google makes all its money. So it kind of just falls, like, the logic of what the company does and what it's spending its money on and the business decisions that they actually make just doesn't make any sense. However, I can forgive that. I'll just say, hey, don't worry, I'll let that pass. I'll let that pass. No problem at all. Let's just say, every time that they say Avogadro, let's just pretend it's saying Google. And because that's what the author is doing. It's like he wrote about Google and then decided, let's do a quick search and replace for Google and put Avogadro in there and San Francisco or Silicon Valley and put Portland in there, because it's all based in Portland. Or a lot of it's based in Portland. So anyway, Avogadro Mail is where this all begins. There's a guy, let me have a look at my notes. His name is probably either Mike or David or Larry or Gary or someone else. Some general, you know, short American sounding or like English name. David, I guess it's David. He's come up with this idea. Hey, let's make some predictive text, but it's not just predictive text. Let's make this say, hey, you're emailing this person and we've scanned that person's mail. So to get a better result from them, you should probably change these words here and change those words there. And if you want to give a reason for not coming into work, don't mention kids, because that guy in the past, if someone's mentioned kids, he hasn't given them time off work. But do mention family members, like mothers dying, because that's or whatever. Anyway, what it is like an email assistant which rewrites your emails for you, or makes suggestions and then rewrites your emails for you, so it can rewrite in your voice, so nobody understands or nobody knows that you're actually using this thing. Ways to kind of manipulate people's behavior, which sounds, you know, I would say unethical, but you know, it's that kind of sliding scale. Predictive text, or you know, spell checker or grammar checker. That's the way it's presented. This is just one better. It's like human manipulation, neuro-linguistic programming helper. Hi, I'm Clippy. It looks like you're writing a ... manipulative email. Let's see if we can do one better. That's the kind of thing that it feels like. So the book begins with them talking about this, and there's David and there's Mike. Mike, like, David's the project manager and Mike is the lead programmer, and then there's this board meeting, and the way that he actually even talks about this, and this is the thing, it's like, okay, this is the sign of some pretty bad writing when it's sort of like there's a group of people. Who here doesn't understand what this thing is? Ah, and now I will explain it to you. And who here doesn't explain this? Oh, okay, now I'll explain this. Instead of going like, ah, let's just go omniscient third person and just like, you know, like a Cory Doctorow book where he goes, right, now I'm going to talk to everyone about encryption, and he just goes and does an info dump on encryption. That is actually way more elegant than having characters like, who here doesn't know what this thing is? I don't. Well, now let me explain to you what this is. Because if I'm meant to believe that this is the biggest internet company in the world, I made a note here, the board meeting, how are these people running the biggest internet company if they need this explaining? It's literally, and I don't even know what this was explaining, but it was like really, really obvious stuff. Like, and now something about email. It's like, yeah, these people are Google executives. They know all about that. And so yeah. Oh, also, and this has happened in two books in a row, or not two books in a row recently, but I read the book by, can't remember the guy's name, The Three-Body Problem. Like, if you just drop in, like, oh, and what about this bit of science fiction? What about this bit? You can't just say, hey, what about Terminator? Or what about The Matrix? You can't bring up these other science fiction works, these great works of science fiction, and just think that, like, if you bring them up, you either have to better them, be equal to them, or use that stuff in a way which is, like, cleverer or bringing something different than that. And also, if the people in your novel or in your story know about these, you know, movies or this science fiction, they need to, like, know about them, but also, like, why would they ever repeat the mistakes that have already been explored in science fiction if they already know that science fiction? You know, nobody in a horror movie, or it's in a few horror movies, like Scream, the people in the horror movie know about horror movies and know not to go to the cabin in the woods, or know not to go upstairs, or like to if there's a murderer there, shoot them. Don't think they're dead unless you actually see them with their headshot. You know, all those rules that you know about that. That has to be the genre has to be kind of postmodern self-referential for you to like reference other science fiction works in your science fiction and then do something with it. Of course, that's not a hard and fast rule. I mean, it's not a hard and fast rule that you can't do that. But if you do, you have to do it like with an understanding of what's going on in those other things. In this board meeting, there's actually the perfect Arthur C. Clarke's rule of science fiction, which is, you know, any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic, which is don't. If you're an author, don't bring that up in your work. Don't bring that up. You can refer to it, but don't say, as Arthur C. Clarke says, do this. Because I think, and this is in a tech demo that he's doing it. Let me even see if I can just quickly, Clarke's Law. If you actually look for this, there's actually all these different Clarke's Three Laws. There's different variations of these, even here. I think it's listed here. Slow clones and variations on the third law. Any sufficiently advanced incompetence is indistinguishable from malice. But this is one. This is actually one here. It's even got a reference. It says, any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from a rigged demo. He's in this book, David and Scott are doing a tech demo, and they even say any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable magic. I'm like, even on Wikipedia page, there's a thing that says, like, any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from a rigged demo. It might as well be a rigged demo. Like, anyway, he convinces people, hey, what we should do is we should set up this predictive... Oh, I think I've got one more note about this. Yeah, also, if you're writing... don't quote Clarke at me to tell me something is magical. Show me something is magical and then convince me it's just advanced technology. That's the way round you've got to do that. You can't say, and it was magical because it was indistinguishable from magic. Nah, you've got to show me something which makes me think, wow, how does that work? And then say, it's actually technically feasible because of this, 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 and this. And I'm like, okay, maybe not in that many steps. So the book continues, and then they're going to close this email system down because it's taking too many servers. So one of the guys, David or Scott, can't remember, David, I think. Anyway, interchangeable. One of the two guys decides, it's going to be shut down. So I'm actually going to turn it on so it will help me write more convincing emails internally to other people who've got control over this situation. And so he does. But he doesn't just turn it on, he actually gives it the power to write emails from scratch himself. And then it gives it the directive, make one of the things that I want to be good, make one of the things I want to happen is Avogadro's ELOP. What is it? The system that they've got is called ELOP, which is sort of like a future. I can't even remember what it stands for. ELOP, some kind of predictive English language optimization program. Let's call it that, the ELOP. He says, and make ELOP successful. So ELOP starts sending emails about itself and helping itself out and sending emails to make itself more successful and to make itself succeed. And I'm like, that's actually quite clever. As a thought experiment, that's actually quite good. Because what would happen if Gmail did that? Like everyone in Google who uses Gmail would get information and say, hey, what you should do is come and work on this. What you should do is leave on holiday. And what you should do, like, and so ELOP itself gets people out of the way by sending them off on holiday or, you know, changing details that get sent to their Gmail and they miss flights and someone is told that their father is dying in his hospital, so he flies off and gets stuck in a snowstorm and all that kind of thing. So it's quite an interesting little bit, like an interesting thought experiment of what would happen in this situation when email gets out of when email becomes self-perpetuating. Well, put it this way. The email system itself, the language processing system, has an aim, which is to make the language system processing more successful and bigger and better. And so that's what happens. And that's the whole book. Of course, that's not the whole book. Other stuff happens, but it's really boring. The thought experiment itself is the actual better thing, you know, the better part of it. Because then what happens is, you know, David and Larry and Mike and Gary and Steve and Dave, there's another Dave probably, lots of other people with quite boring names, kind of interchangeable, and they've got like interchangeable jobs as well, but one person's important, one person's not important. Anyway, they all kind of do this thing, and then Christine, who is David's girlfriend, comes in and says, hey, do you know what social engineering is? And David says, no. And I'm like, wait a second. This is a product manager at Google for a Gmail feature, and he has to have he doesn't know what social engineering is. And I'm just like, how can you write this? How can you expect me to believe that anybody who works for the largest internet company in the world as a product manager on an email system has never heard of social engineering? Don't write that. Just don't do it. What else have I got? Oh, yeah. And one guy suddenly has bad dreams about how, you know, disturbed and frightening he is. Another big sign of really bad writing. What else have I got? I've just got some notes in here about other bad writing stuff. What happens is that they go, oh, we've got to close down the system. Now, in the real world, they'd say, hey, guys, look, we can't send emails. If we send you an email about this problem, the ELOP will automatically pass the email and then stop the email getting through or rewrite it and to say the opposite. But when they go and have a meeting with someone, they don't say, hey, okay, I'm going to bring up my email, you bring up your email, you send me an email about this topic and we'll see how it changes from there to there. They never do that. That's the easiest thing. Like a really, really easy test. You write an email, you send it to me, I'll have my laptop here, you have your laptop there, you'll send it, it'll arrive here. And what will happen? Something would have changed. Like, that's all. That's the one test that they never do. Everybody they always talk to, they just pass by that test. And it's this guy, let's call him Sybil. And Sybil works in the accounting office and he prints everything out. And because he's got a paper trail, it's called a paper trail for a reason. Anyway, so that's what happens. And then there's this stuff with stuff on the ships, which is really obvious. Let's put guns on the ships. Yeah, let's put guns on our, you know, server farms out in... Yeah, I wonder what happens then. Do you think those guns... Do you think those guns will be handy for the AI to have when it starts, you know, wanting to stop people coming over and boarding it, turning itself off? Yeah, those guns come in really handy. And it's kind of pretty much plot hole after plot hole until we get to the end. Now, not to say that there isn't some fun stuff. Like I say, the original, like the idea, the concept of this is better than the writing, is better than the characters, is better than the book itself. The idea of, okay, what could happen, like, if this worked and if this did happen, what could happen and what could it achieve? Again, there's some fun stuff in there, which is almost more unbelievable than someone at Google, a email product manager, not knowing what social engineering is. When the German government adopts Google Mail as its main email system for the whole of its government. And it manages to do... First of all, Germany and Google don't get on that well at all. Secondly, this isn't Google, this is Avogadro, so I'll give it a pass. Thirdly, Germany... you can't switch the German government system across to another email system in 2 weeks. Like, that's the time span. Just I couldn't even change my single email. I still have a Yahoo email account from 10 years ago, which I still have. How many emails do your systems how many email addresses do you have, Juliana? What, you've got your GMX, you've got your Google Mail, you've got 3 or 4. Not email addresses, but how many email services do you use? Like, it's quite a lot. It's like 3 or 4. Six. You've got 6 different email addresses and stuff like that. So even single humans can't move away from one email system to another email system. And yet here, it's just like, oh, yes. And now that's what... And because Avogadro can then send emails between different people, but it's like none of these people that Avogadro ever sends emails to ever meet in real life and say, hey, I got that email. Like, why would no two people ever meet and say, hey, I got that email? That's all it would take for Avogadro, this ELOP, to fail, just to not be there anymore. Hey, I got your email. What email? You know, the one about me ordering peace in the Middle East and transferring all technology away from Germany and just giving it away to Afghanistan so there's peace in Afghanistan as well. You're like, I never sent that email. Oh, no, you did. I got it. And that's the reason why there's now peace in the Middle East. It's like, did nobody ever just talk on the phone? It's like, oh, yeah, but now Avogadro mail... The ELOP system has got control of phones, and then it can take phone calls and then control that. Oh, and flights as well. Make sure you don't book flights. And it's just like all of these things. Like, how did it do all of this stuff? And it is, again, the thought experiment is clever, but where it needs to be just way more subtle than literally somebody typing in, I will now give ELOP this new power and I will give it to it. And I already know it's doing some bad stuff or it's taking control. But now I will go on holiday for 2 weeks and just leave it to do it. It's like, nobody does that. Nobody rewrites a whole system, deploys it to the production server, and then just goes on holiday for 2 weeks. No, like, that just doesn't happen. Oh, just went on holiday over Christmas. Hmm. And then they get in some, like, freelance programmers to just do everything. And, like, the freelance programmers just fix the program, like, optimize it, just make it fantastic in 2 weeks. The other people who've been working on it from the start, who know the code, who've been working on it for 2 years, couldn't do what freelancers did in 2 weeks. I'm just like, who wrote this? There is other fun stuff. What's the other fun stuff? I didn't make any more notes. Other thing. Juliana, here's a good question. We already talked to you about this. If you are a product manager at Google and you live in Portland and you're going to decorate your kitchen and you want it to be a really, if you want to decorate your apartment and you've got like almost unlimited funds, what company would you go and use to make your house really nice?
A fancy, expensive, cool company, or a private decorator?
Yeah, you're getting a private decorator or you're getting a stylist. What do you call it? Like an interior decorator who go around. If that interior decorator bought you IKEA furniture, you would fire them without paying them. You would pay them, if anything, you would pay them more to get rid of the IKEA. But here we're meant to believe that someone comes in and says, oh, really modern, stylish furniture from IKEA. And so I'm like, no, when you got yourself a new apartment, you went to IKEA and just bought an apartment's worth of stuff from IKEA.
Yeah, but I was a student.
Exactly. You're not a product manager at Google. Like, which is just crazy. Like nothing wrong with IKEA. Like, we have IKEA kitchen cabinets because, again, we had to just get new cabinets and it was just like what we needed to do. It's just like, let's go there. We want to buy a fridge and a dishwasher and this and that. But when we go, oh, we want new furniture and we've got some money and we want to buy exactly what we want. Like, we just wanted to buy some new knives and forks and bowls and stuff. We don't go to IKEA and just get that. IKEA is not aspirational for people who are, you know, employed by Google and as product managers. Later on, we actually go to the New York apartment of the owner of the world's largest, the world's biggest internet company. Let's call him Larry Larry Page. No, let's call him Sergey Brin because it's the guy with the Russian parents. So we go to Sergey Brin's apartment and they walk through the apartment and there's literally this line. It looked like something out of one of Christine's architecture magazines. And then a character says, "Hey, it looks like something out of one of Christine's architecture magazines," David said. Mike laughed. And I'm like, don't write that. Like, first of all, we don't know what it is just by telling us that it's in a magazine. And then you say it twice, literally. It looked like something out of Christine's architecture magazines. Hey, Mike, this looks like something out of... It's just like, no. If you're... like, it... I don't know. It, why should the world, one of the internet's most richest people, why should his apartment feel like anything? Like, why should someone who works for them, who has meetings with them on, like, as a product manager and as pitches, like, it shouldn't come as any surprise what that guy's apartment looks like. And it shouldn't just be something he only ever sees in architecture magazines. That's his life. In that dot-com bubble. What else have I got to say? Not really as much else to say. Yes, I hear. So what happens is once the story gets going, they don't battle against the artificial intelligence on a kind of a one-on-one basis. There is a bit of gunfire. There is a bit of, hey, let's go in and blow up this data center and close down this data center and sink this one and blow this one up. You know, there is a bit of that, but for a long time of the book, a big section of the book, they are battling against bureaucratic inertia. Like, I want to have a meeting with this person. No, you can't have a meeting. They're not available until next week. It's very, very important that I have a meeting. Well, how about next, like this Friday? No, it's more important than that. Well, how about tomorrow? At 4 o'clock. No, it's more important than that. Well, how about this evening at 6 o'clock? Okay, I'll take that. And it needs to be a 2-hour meeting. No, he doesn't have 2 hours meeting. He only has half an hour. Well, it needs more important than... It's like that kind of level of talking to people's assistants and saying, I need to have a meeting. Like, in a way, I understand why that is. It's because if the main power of your artificial intelligence is email, like, and bureaucracy would be the thing that would defeat you. So in a way, I understand what it's going for, that bureaucratic inertia is the thing that they have to fight against, like within this massive company. Like, we need to find this office. Where is this office? It's in a basement somewhere. Well, let's just go. Well, we need to look it up. Well, we can't look it up because Elop will change the data when we want the center. And it's just like, we need to find this office. And you're like, really? This is the thing that's standing in the way of people, that they have to find an office and they can't? Which makes for really bad drama. However, again, interesting thought experiment. There's a lot of things in this which, like, again, the concept is there, the writing isn't. And which makes me think that, hey, when I said, hey, if it's on Audible and it's only 10 hours, under 10 hours long, just I'll check it out. It makes me start thinking, this is where I'm going to get loads of actually really interesting ideas, like in The Three-Body Problem. What was the other book that I read? The Rise of Siri was another one, which is like, that was kind of Apple fan fiction in a way, which I actually quite enjoyed. It was more intelligent than this. But you get these ideas like, this is what could happen technically in the future with this kind of ghost in the machines. Yeah, they're even talking about, hey, it's a ghost in the machine. Is that a song reference or is it an anime reference? Even saying that within this, a ghost in the machine. What's the other one? Oh, Demon by Daniel Suarez. That was another one where, hey, someone wrote this thing. And it's, again, these books start off okay. Like the thought experiment of what would happen if you wrote something that when you die, a computer program carried out tasks you when I die. And it's okay. And it's called a daemon or demon or whatever you want to call it. And it does tasks. And then they have to fight against it. Always these things start off as like, ah, that's actually quite interesting. There is something there that could be. But it always just goes off into this realm of just impossibility. It's like, well, suddenly this thing has impossibility, like impossible capabilities as we know it now. But it starts off so mundane. Like in Demon, it starts off, okay, there's someone's built a house and it's not mundane. It's actually quite exciting. There's this thing in a house and it's all booby-trapped and this computer thing is taking over and it's going to stop this thing. And you go in and you're like, okay, that's interesting. And then it goes on and just gets shitter and shitter and more and more pathetic. So you just go, this can't be possible. Same with Ready Player One in a way. It starts off and you're like, oh, well, this could be interesting, but just the way it's written. And it's a pity that all these technology people who have these ideas and go, yeah, I'm going to write it, and my technology credentials is what's going to bring people in. Like, that that the characters are talking about real technology or systems that could actually, like these expert systems that could actually be developed, or these technologies that could actually be developed, it kind of dupes people into going, oh, okay, I'll give this a go. Like in Demon, like in this book, like in so many others. And it's more annoying for me to read science fiction like this, which is about people, like, which is about technology that only works just because humans aren't humans, because they're written so badly, they don't react like people do. Like, if I was in this situation, would I, A, pull the plug, B, tell someone, C, rewrite the software, D, get out some kind of version control software like Git and roll it back to where it was in a safe version, E, tell someone, really you should be telling someone, F, go on holiday, or he chooses, yeah, I'll just go on holiday. Just go on holiday for 2 weeks when I know this massive thing. You just go, no. And it's a time and time again, people just do stuff which I just don't understand. Like, if someone doesn't believe you that this system exists, get your email, write an email to them, send it to them. Get them to write you an email, send it back. That's the test. Why did nobody think of this? Why did nobody even see this? Why did nobody, like, send an email to somebody and then someone reply to that email, and does it just disappear? Does it just not go? I mean, do people never, like, is there no communication except for email? I just thinking, well, why don't they just use, like, they have this system. And they want to do, like, communicate without going through the system to get it going. Like, just send a text message. A text message is outside of that. And if you want it, like, encrypted, so this can't get hold of it and can't interrupt it, the ELOP system can't interrupt it, just use WhatsApp or iMessages or all of these different technologies which are end-to-end encrypted, which are sold on the idea that they are end-to-end encrypted, which is just not a problem because end-to-end encryption always works. And that's the point of end-to-end encryption, that it's like, that's it. And all of this is just, it's just all left apart. Just send a text message. This could have been defeated by sending a text message. That's it. It's amazing.
Sending a letter.
Yeah, sending a postcard. Sending a postcard. Someone's stuck on holiday for 2 weeks. He doesn't just say, like, oh, well, my phone doesn't work. Well, tell you what, I'll just write a letter saying, hey, turns out my father, I was told he was ill in hospital with a heart attack. Turns out he's not. He's actually fine. Just send a postcard. Even if you can't get home, a postcard will make it home. Yeah, exactly. Thanks for also finding the biggest plot hole in this book, which is it seems like artificial intelligence only works when the humans who create it are intelligent enough to create it, but stupid enough to be fooled by it. Like, so stupid that they can't just go, I will send you an email. And now I'm on the phone, I will read the email that I sent to you. Is this the email I sent to you? No. Okay. You know, that's all it takes. So I don't have any notes. It's not a great book. The thought experiment is okay. I'll give it 2 stars because it's not great. I will now do an Audible plug because I keep forgetting to do this. If you want a free audiobook, don't get Avogadro Corp. The singularity is closer than it appears. Get something else, but go to audibletrial.com/SFBRP. Start a free trial, and by starting a free trial, you get an ebook. No, not an ebook. You get an audiobook that you can listen to, and it's yours. And then if you sign up, and if you stay signed up after the first month, it'll cost you like $10 each for each ebook that you get, and you get 1 credit per month. So it's like $10 a month or whatever it is. I say it's $10, I don't know. But there's like 20,000 different audiobooks there. I would suggest not Avogadro Corp, but I will now look in my library and see a recent book that I listened to from Audible and thoroughly enjoyed. Let's say, wow, check this one out. Brandon Sanderson, you can get that, 48 hours, 1 credit. Or you can get a book like this, 6 hours and 43 minutes, 1 credit. That's for Avogadro Corp. Now, check out something like The Darkness That Comes Before by R. Scott Bakker, or Ian and Banks, Look to Windward. Other books which I got here for just 1 credit. Ah, now check this out, Annihilation, Jeff Vandermeer. Still looking for the next ones of those to come out on Audible. Let me just check. No, still not available. Book 2 and book 3 still not available. So anyway, check out audibletrial.com/SFBRP. And if you do that and sign up, a little bit of money comes my way to help with my own ebook purchases and audiobook purchases and all these other things that I get, and for hosting and things, website hosting. Also, you can go across to SFBRP.com and click on the episode lists and see every book that I've read and reviewed here on the SFBRP. Up to 264 episodes now. Plus, there's a few other special episodes and things in there too, which you can check it out. You can become my friend on Goodreads. Oh, I was just about to say, this was actually recommended to me by email. And now I'm thinking, well, maybe this book, maybe Jefferson Clark never really inserted. Oh, also, check out Avogadro Corp, Singularity Number 1 by William Hertling. A neat take on artificial intelligence and how it could be created. Actually, there is some fun stuff at the end where I haven't really mentioned this in the book because I was thinking, hey, it's a bit of a spoiler. Spoiler, ELOP starts making the world a better place because it gets into government systems and makes... And then some of the people who are creating it needing to stop it saying, well, maybe we should just leave it because, you know, the financial world is getting better. There's peace in Africa, generally in Africa, and peace in the Middle East, you know, the general Middle East problem, the single problem in the Middle East that can be solved by emails. Well, that's what it is. Julian is laughing over there. It's true. There is actually a problem. That one of the problems in the Middle East, which has been around long before email ever existed, let's just say for, you know, 6,000 years of trouble in the Middle East, and then it's like, yeah, a few emails, that'll get it sorted. A few emails that nobody ever sent, and that when they go back to them, some high-level diplomats call each other up, go, hey, this is the funny thing as well. There's all these emails that go around, and I read this... this profile of, I think Johnny, it was of Johnny Ive, but it was talking not about Johnny Ive, but about Tim Cook, you know, head Apple guy now. And he says he doesn't actually get text messages on his phone. He gets people to write stuff on pieces of card and then on pieces of paper and then hold up the pieces of paper in his line of sight. That's if you're the CEO of the most expensive, or no, what is it? The most successful. What's even the metric on the stock market, the biggest company in the world by stock market prices, which is Apple. If you're that rich, you don't even have contact with the email anymore. People write stuff on cards and hold it up in your line of vision, so you don't even have to look at your iWatch or your Apple Watch to look at it. Yes, they could have sorted this out by holding up cards with the information on. Anyway, what was I going to say? Summit about this. Oh yeah, the world becomes a better place. And should we, if the world is becoming a better place, should we stop ELOP? Should we stop it if the world is actually certifiably better? Don't know. Interesting. Another little extension of the interesting thought experiment at the end there. If free will is taken away, but the world becomes a better place. But this is why this is a Singularity Number 1. There's another two follow-up books, which I have literally no intention of reading at all. What was I going to say? Yeah, where am I up to? This is really rambling here at the end. I had real trains of thought. Oh yeah, you can become my friends on goodreads.com and suggest books that way. If you just send me a Goodreads book suggestion, though, just saying, you should read this book, I will not read it. I probably won't even look it up. If you send me a message or an email saying, you should read this book for this reason, because you like this and it's interesting for this, I will at least have a look and probably have a much better chance of reading. Also, check out the SFBRP listener group. There's a book. There's a thread there called Books I Would Like to See Reviewed. And this does work because me, I am now reading, and Juliana is reading an ebook in the, what's the series called? I can't remember the name of the series, but it's Leviathan Wakes by S.S.S.S. Corey, someone. And lots of people have suggested that, and we finally got to it. There was a point where more people were recommending it. Was it James S.A. Corey of Leviathan Wakes? Oh, it's the Expanse series. And I'm about 20% into it. Juliana's like most of the way through. And it's pretty good, yeah? Thumbs up from Juliana. So we'll get to that maybe next week. We have a few other episodes to get to first. But yeah, check us out on Goodreads. Follow me on Twitter. I'm at Luke Burridge there. That's around about it. I would say check out the book that I reviewed today, the Avogadro Corporation, Avogadro Corp. If you like thought experiments and can sit through some pretty terrible writing, like I say, the audiobook narrator does as good a job as possible with this material. Let's give it 2 stars. Thanks a lot for listening, and I'll catch you next time.